Insightful podcasts by informative hosts. Insights into Things, a podcast network.
Welcome to Insights into Entertainment, a podcast series taking a deeper look into entertainment and media. Your hosts, Joseph and Michelle Whalen, a husband and wife team of pop culture fanatics, are exploring all things from music and movies to television and fandom.
Welcome to Insights into Entertainment. This is episode 28, Jedi Middays and Dead Names. I'm your host, Joseph Whalen, and my brilliant and beautiful co-host, Michelle Whalen.
Hello.
Yes, that would be you. Cue, please.
I was waiting for you to say, you know, your normal, how are you?
And how are you?
I am fantastic. Thanks for asking.
Wow. Okay, you think by episode 28 we'd have this down pat by now.
I think it's the sugar from the donuts this morning.
That must be it. Okay, so busy one today. Mm-hmm. So in our Disney Detective, we have some Obi-Wan news. We have some new uncharacteristically discounted tickets from Disney News. Then we have a cute little article about a mom, what moms do on first days of school with Disney. Then in our entertainment news, we have the passing of a very well-respected actor. Then we'll talk about some respect that IMDb is finally giving the trans actors. And then we'll talk about
Star Wars stuff.
Can I introduce you do everything else on this show. Could I introduce them at least? Jeez, stealing my thunder. And it was like a Star Wars one. Like, you could have taken the Barbie one instead.
I'm sorry.
So disappointed. I get no respect. Anyway, are you ready to get into it now? Now that you've started me off on a bad note here. And we'll go for Disney Detective. To you, my dear.
You're going to be all grumpy now.
Yes, I am.
So this was kind of exciting news that came out. So one of the other new shows that Disney Plus is going to be doing will be an Obi-Wan Kenobi live action. And they have obviously tapped Ewan McGregor to reprise the role. So no other details has really come out. But obviously, if you're a fan of Star Wars, you know that he played in the original not the original trilogy, the prequels of the trilogies, in Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, and Revenge of the Sith. So there's obviously been some talk going back and forth about him reprising the role, and now that they have Disney Plus coming with, you know, all this new content, this is one of the new shows that they're bringing up.
I find it interesting that he's going to come back and essentially do a TV role.
Mm-hmm.
He has graduated to the A-plus status of not being one to do television.
Right, right.
So if they bring this back, I don't know it's going to be a full series. I could see
being a mini-series, like a six-part, you know, epic
right.
type.
And honestly, I don't think there's enough story there to make it a full series.
Right, because where does it start? Do you go back, you know, his more younger years, or do you from...
The talk of the movie was supposed to be picking up after Revenge of the Sith.
And before
what happened between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope.
Okay, I can see that.
There were several novels already written for that time period. Whether or not they'll take the story from that or not is another case. But they've got plenty of story to work with there for a movie.
Right, right.
I don't think there's plenty to work with there for
a continuous series.
Right.
Okay.
as a secondary note to this, I did read an article this week that Disney is canceling or ending Star Wars Resistance after its second season.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if this is a move to get it off, because it's on Disney XD now, so okay. It's on Disney's channel.
Right, right. Or to move it to...
There's been no talk of it being moved to Disney Plus.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure if the storyline that it's going down is not supportable with the new movie coming out or not.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of crossover between Resistance and the latest trilogy.
Okay.
But it came as a shocker to a lot of people that they were ending it after two seasons, especially considering they're bringing back Clone Wars for its last season, which they had canceled midway through production.
I was going to say, and that was canceled a while back, too.
Yeah, I mean, that was years ago it was canceled.
Right, right.
So they're bringing that back on Disney XD. But it's entirely possible that because Obi-Wan's coming back, they didn't want to support production on, you know, four shows, I guess they've had at that point. Because you figure they've got The Mandalorian.
Right.
They've got the Rogue One spinoff with Diego Luna.
Right.
They'll have the Obi-Wan series. So that's three series right there, which is the most TV series they've ever had in production.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the most...
Well, and are they going to have them all in production at the same time, or are they kind of scattering them, kind of like what Netflix does? You know, it's like you don't have, you know, this series will go for this long, and then so many months later they show this one.
The airing of them might not be simultaneous.
Okay, but they're
because the production the production schedules are actually so long, especially for Mandalorian.
Okay.
They finished the first season. They've actually started working on the second season of Mandalorian already. I haven't heard anything on the production schedule of the Rogue One spinoff yet, though. So that's three series right now you're working on, whereas if you go back far enough back, they've only ever had two Star Wars shows in production at most.
Mm.
And this is back before Disney even acquired them, when they had... the Caravan of Carriage series and the Droids animated series going together in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So having three series together, you know, I have to also wonder if this is saturation again.
Right, right.
You know, you saw what happened when Solo came out.
Right.
I mean, Solo just wasn't a very good movie.
Right, but the fact that it was, you know, every year there was a Star Wars movie, whereas for so many years... you had such a long break in between the movies that it made you, you know, want to see.
Yeah, I mean, traditionally, the formula was every 3 years a Star Wars movie.
Right.
You know, 77, 80, 83 is what set the pace.
Right.
You know, your next trilogy kind of went off of that slightly with a slightly different schedule. But I think that's the magic formula, because it gives people enough time to
digest.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, everything.
But,
yeah.
You know, Disney's trying to keep Star Wars to a Marvel-esque universe. And the thing with, I mean, it works with Marvel because there's so much story out there.
And there's
to
so
tell.
Many different characters that, you know, everybody kind of knows. Whereas with Star Wars, you have your core, and then now you have all these, like, offshoots. But you only know about those offshoots if, you know, you read the comics or read the books or, you know, they're for a lot of people, you know, a lot of other people, they're kind of obscure characters and nobody knows who they are. And it's like, well, why do I want to watch a movie or, you know, TV series about this if I don't know, you know, anything about it?
And one more thing I did want to add to this story before we move on was there was an update. Back before Last Jedi dropped, Disney had announced that they were going to allow Rian Johnson to do a new trilogy that was unrelated to the Skywalker saga.
Mm-hmm.
When Last Jedi dropped, and we'll say to mixed reception by the Star Wars fans, I thought it was horrendous.
Right.
I still do. I still am curious how J.J. Abrams is going to pull this stinker out of the
trash
can.
He's going to save the day.
but there was an announcement that Disney is still planning to let Rian Johnson move forward with his non-Skywalker trilogy.
I don't know why.
okay, well, if you're going to ruin it, pick a time period that nobody cares about
right.
and ruin that.
And nobody cares. And if you watch and you go, eh.
Right.
Right, exactly.
I mean, I definitely don't think Rian Johnson is the future of Star Wars. If anything, you know, he is the downfall of what everyone already knows and loves.
Mm.
So the next thing we had on Disney Detectives was Midday Magic. Tell us about that.
So this was something that just came up during the week, that they're going to be offering an after 12 p.m. park ticket. And again, this is kind of very unusual for them to, you know,
offer something discounted.
Now, if you've ever gone down to the Orlando area and done a convention in the area or done a convention at Disney, they do actually offer discounted park tickets for people that are attending conventions. So they have like an after 2 p.m. ticket and an after 4 p.m. ticket.
Like when we went to Celebration.
Right, when we went to Celebration. And also when years ago when I went down to a convention for work, we actually had gotten those convention tickets, you know, as well. So, you know, if you happen to be in the know, they do, you know, offer this. But this is something that they're doing for the fall. It's you can do just a regular base ticket or you can do a park hopper ticket, but you have to do a minimum of 2 days and it's up to 4 days. And depending on what day you actually pick to do, the price could actually range from $81 a day up to $100 and change a day. So it's one of those, you have to go onto the website. So if you go to disneyworld.disney.go.com and look for tickets, and it's under the Midday Magic tickets, there's a whole little website. Now you can still do fast passes, but obviously it has to be for an
obviously
after 12.
Not gonna be anything available.
Well, no, because it's still going to be, you're still going to be able to make your fast pass reservation 30 days out, just like anybody else. You just can't do a fast pass that's before.
Oh, so they are like doing
noon.
It in advance.
Mm-hmm,
okay.
Yeah, it's still just like anything else. It's good for all four of the parks, so you don't have to designate which park you're going to. When you purchase it, you just pick which days that you're going to buy it, and it expires 7 days from the first day that you use it. So, you know, you can't use one day, you know, and then 3 weeks later use your second
day. So how much of a discount are we talking here?
Oh, it's a pretty big discount, because when we were looking, tickets were up to $150 for one day.
For one day, yeah.
So, you know, you're almost getting 2 days for the price of one. Now, obviously, the more days you buy, the cheaper it's going to be. So for 2 days, they're saying from $81. If you're doing 4 days, it's from $74. So that
and
is
that's
a
per day.
That's per day. So that is a significant, you know, a discount. And the nice thing is, you know, now you have Animal Kingdom that's open late.
So you can you combine this with extra magic hours if you're staying on property?
You can, but only for the PM extra magic hours. You can't do it for the early morning extra hours.
So they don't let you in it 11 or something like that.
Right. You'd have to, you know, 12 o'clock is when your ticket is good for, but if the park happens to close at 10 and extra magic hours are until midnight,
okay,
you can stay until midnight.
And I'm assuming with special events like the Christmas party and Halloween, you can still combine these with that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you still could. You know, but at that point for the Christmas parties, you're usually getting in
4 o'clock. Usually
at 4 o'clock. So here, you know, you're only getting really 4 hours, you know, extra on top of it.
Right.
Now, obviously, the thing to do is if you're planning on going, you know, from now until now, the tickets, you can only buy them up until December 15th. They aren't offering them because it's a fall promotion, obviously, because after the 15th is their busiest Christmas season, so they're not going to do anything discounted. But my suggestion is if you are going to look at these tickets before you buy them, you do want to look at what the park hours are, because the Halloween party, would be going on, you know, for the beginning of the fall,
right.
And then you have the Christmas party, and when those parties are going on, Magic Kingdom closes at 6 p.m. So you want to make sure you're maximizing your.
So just to clarify, when you buy these. Do you have to designate the days that you're
using?
Yes,
you have to pick the days. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they won't let you pick anything after December 15th.
Right. When I had looked on the website, it basically this promotion only goes until December 15th.
So this is a limited time promotion.
And maybe it's one of those things where once they see how it goes, then, you know, they might offer it again. But it was interesting to see because, again, you did have to already pick the days. And I know sometimes when we decide to do a trip, we know, okay, well, we're going to be down for, you know, this whole week. We're going to do 3 days, but we're not necessarily sure which day we're going to go. And there have been times when we've changed our minds, where we've made fast pass arrangements and we've changed them at the last minute because, oh, we weren't feeling well. We wanted to do this instead.
Right.
Where,
well, and
here
we,
you're kind of locked
that,
in.
We've done it as annual pass holders.
True.
Which, you've got a lot more freedom to come and go as you please.
Right,
then.
That is true. So here, you know, and it was weird because, like, when I was looking, like, Monday was $81, but Tuesday was $84 or something. It was just weird how, you know, I could understand the weekend being more money than, you know, like, your Tuesday through Thursday, but it was just odd how looking
at it.
But
kudos to Disney for giving you another option here.
For and especially since so many people are saying, you know, Disney's getting to the point where they're pricing you out, you know, you're not
going
to be able to go.
Well, and it makes me wonder if the blowback that they got from the recent ticket increases.
That could be.
And the
that
decrease
could totally
in attendance
be.
Might be signaling a change for Disney.
Yeah, so you can do regular base tickets, and you can actually do hopper tickets as well. And the hopper tickets allow you to do multiple parks within the same day. So
okay. So what else do we have for Disney Detective?
So the last Disney story, which was just kind of like a really kind of cute piece, was Mom Tape takes epic photos alone at Disney after her kids head off to school for the first day. This was on abcnews.com. And so this mom, they happened to live in Orlando. So it wasn't like she flew down from, you know, New York to drop
the kids
off
and fly to Florida.
Because that would be really cool. I would totally do that. So she decided, you know, I dropped the kids off at school. What am I going to do? I'm going to go to Disney.
I'm going to Disney World.
I'm going to Disney World. So for those of you that don't know, Disney World now, it's very popular. They have these celebration pins. So, you know, it started out with happy birthday pins. Then they have anniversary pins. And then they have for people that have just gotten married. And then they have a generic one that just says, I'm celebrating. And then the cast member will write, you know, a little saying afterwards. So if you see, you know, we have a picture of it. So she put, you know, I'm celebrating the first day of school. And what she decided to do was actually just go around to different cast members and get her picture taken with various cast members, some being characters, so like Snow White, but then she also did, you know, some, you know, custodial staff too, and, you know, basically went around and everybody kind of smiled. But the best reaction was actually when she went to the fairy godmother and showed her, and she just got like the biggest hug and the biggest reaction of, you know, what she was there celebrating. So it was kind of cool. You know, and she was saying, you know, we live so close. There are lots of times when, you know, after dinner, you know, we'll take the boys to, you know, to Disney just to ride on a couple of rides, or we'll do dinner there. Or if I want to go for, you know, a nice walk, I'll go to the resorts and go for a walk. So, you know, being a local obviously has the advantage. So this was just kind of, you know, again, a really cool thing because a lot of kids are starting to go back to school and stuff. So I could totally relate.
See, this, I'm pretty sure you just put this in here so that I didn't bash Disney this week because I've been doing it the last 3 weeks.
I needed that Disney feel good story.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's funny because, you know, as we happened to be talking about this earlier today, Great Adventure, I grew up in the same town as Six Flags Great Adventure in Jackson, New Jersey. And for many years, we were pass holders, and we would do that too. We would, you know, at night, what do you want to do? You know, oh, the park's open for a couple of more hours, and we would just go, you know, to get dinner or to watch the fireworks or, you know, obviously not to the level of Disney, but, you know.
Well, and again, that's sort of the same thing we do when we're down there with annual passes.
Right. It's,
well, what do you want to do? Well, you know, it's 6 o'clock at night. We just finished dinner. Let's go walk around the Magic Kingdom.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
Let's just go hang out.
Right, right. So you kind of have that feel. So, it was a cute little, what am I going to do? So
that was all we had for Disney Detective,
uh-huh,
right?
That is it.
So we will come back with our entertainment news of the week.
Mm-hmm.
Go for entertainment news?
Sure. So a sad story that came out last night was that Peter Fonda, the son of obviously Henry Fonda and sister of Jane Fonda, had passed away from complications from lung cancer. He was 79 years old. The family confirmed the sad news in a statement, which has been all over the place. So People reported it, Vanity Fair, you know, all the different news outlets. And they made the announcement that it is with deep sorrow that we share the news of Peter Fonda has passed away, the family said. He passed away peacefully on Friday morning, August 16th at 11:05 at his home in Los Angeles, surrounded by his family. The official cause of death was respiratory failure due to lung cancer. In one of the saddest moments of our lives, we are not able to find the appropriate words to express the pain in our hearts, but as we grieve, we ask that you respect our privacy. And they go on to say that while we mourn the loss of this sweet and gracious man, we also wish for all to celebrate his spirit and his love of life. The family finished with, and in honor of Peter, please raise a glass to freedom. So I thought that was a nice little...
That is a nice gesture.
A nice little gesture. And, you know, obviously, he came, you know, he was Henry Fonda's, you know, son. So he was kind of in the spotlight, you know, at a young age. But finally came into his own in 1969 when he was in Easy Rider. He was one of the producers of it. That kind of helped to bring about his career. And then, you know, later on went and did more producing, obviously more acting, you know, as well. Obviously, you know, his sister Jane was, you know, obviously in the family business as well.
That's, you know, and that's the thing. When you have a father like that, that mm-hmm. is a tough legacy to have to try to...
Oh, absolutely.
One, and live up to, and two, distinguish yourself.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, one of the other things in looking back, you know, it was a very troubled childhood as well, because their mother committed suicide when Peter was 10 and Jane was 12.
Mm-hmm.
And it became one of those things that nobody wanted to talk about. You know, for years he was told by his grandmother that his mother had a heart attack, and it wasn't until, you know, years later that he and his father actually kind of reconciled and had a heart to heart and, you know, came to terms with everything that had happened, you know, during his childhood. So,
no, it's tough.
Yeah. So,
well, that's sad. Well, farewell, Mr. Fonda, and we wish the family well.
Mm-hmm.
So, moving right along.
Moving right along.
So we also have some breakthrough, I guess, policy changes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At IMDb with regard to trans actors. Tell us a little bit about that.
So this story came from pinknews.co.uk, and it was that IMDb is finally going to allow trans actors to remove their dead names. Now, for those that don't know what the term dead name is.
Which, I have to say, I didn't before this show, and I do now, and I am much more educated now.
Right, and that was why I wanted to make sure that I included this in our podcast. So a dead name is the birth name of someone who has changed it. The term is specifically used in the LGBTQ community by people who are transgendered and elect to go by their chosen name rather than what their given name was. So that's what that's what the term is. So the Amazon-based company told Variety on Tuesday that IMDb is now going to permit the removal of birth names if the birth name is not broadly publicly known by the person no longer using that name. So the announcement came after a coalition of LGBTQ groups, including GLAAD, joined together to have this changed. So now IMDb will now allow the stars and or their representatives to make the edits on the pages. And one of the interesting things is that they were talking about, the article talked about how Wikipedia actually does allow, has already allowed this, and they actually, for some transgendered actors, they actually have blocked pages because Wikipedia is one of those pages where anybody can go in and, and make edits, and they actually had put blocks on certain pages so that nobody could go in, you know, so and troll it.
For IMDb, how does this actually work? Because you could have Bruce Jenner, let's say, for instance. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know how many credits he would have had to his name, but
He had a lot.
He did have a lot.
Right.
So all the things that he's done in the decades prior to going through the transition,
right,
do they all get edited or just his page get edited?
Well, I think in reading through, it kind of almost sounded like it was going to be at the discretion of the actor.
Okay.
How they would want to be seen because, you know, like, you know, one of the actors who mentioned that, you know, was speaking up about this, he had already transitioned before he became an actor.
Right.
So he didn't
have
anything.
So he had no credits to go back
to. So he didn't have anything. They said that that was really going to be for somebody that had a career in, as one name and was now going to change to another.
So now does this cover just actors or is this producers, writers, directors,
anybody,
everything?
You know, anybody that has any sort of credit, you know, you're going to be able to go through and
and the reason
you know,
I asked
the
first question is it could be confusing going back and looking at credits for work that someone did back in, say, the 80s.
Right.
And they were known as that actor, that name back then. And when you
I could see, you know, maybe having something where if you clicked on, you know, Joe Smith and Joe Smith is now Josephine. You know, like if you click on the old link, you know, from
almost like how they annotate married names and maiden names.
Right. And maybe that's what they would do is that, you know, they would click that, you know, to bring up.
And
you
know what?
I
think the biggest thing I guess I could see about this is, you know, it may seem like a small thing to do, but, you know, in a grand scheme of things, this is huge. This is how
You're actually seeing somebody for who they truly are.
Right, you're acknowledging that person for who they are
exactly.
now. Exactly. I think that's a huge step, you know, for our society to say, okay, you know, you are now this person. Now we acknowledge who you are. We acknowledge the personality that you are now, and all the accomplishments that you have now are this person here.
Right.
And I think it's a step in the right direction. I think,
absolutely.
I think there's a lot more steps that need to happen. But it's definitely moving down the right path.
Yeah.
That's very cool. Oh, look at that. There's a Star Wars article. Wow. Who would have thought? Gee, I didn't know that.
What? You didn't know? You didn't prep?
Why don't you tell us about the Star Wars article that you ruined for me earlier?
Oh, my goodness. We're back to that. So, John Williams will score The Rise of Skywalker, and it will feature every Star Wars theme in the score.
Well, then once he got to score, all he has to do is go back and come up with a hits track at that point.
You got to mash it together. So the legendary composer will...
So this is basically John Williams' mixtape.
That's kind of cool, actually, when you think about it. That is awesome.
He could just use my playlist on my Flex server.
He sure could. good, goodness. So the legendary composer will deliver a whopping 135 minutes of music to conclude the Star Wars saga. Culminating a saga that began in 1977 would be a daunting prospect for anyone except for John Williams. The finale of Skywalker, the Skywalker saga will bring his tenure as a composer of the Star Wars galaxy to a bittersweet end.
Well, you know, it's like Carrie Fisher said about George Lucas's writing. You can write this ship, but nobody can actually read it.
So William has been the composer, obviously, for every single episode of the Skywalker saga, and his masterful themes, obviously, have become the lifeblood of the franchise. So he's actually been scoring, and the idea is that there's going to be bits and pieces of other famous scores kind of weaved in.
Jaws. I want to hear Jaws in there.
No, not Jaws.
And Raiders of the Lost Ark.
No. Stop. So this article, they were actually interviewing his brother, Don Williams, and he said that he's basically has 135 minutes worth of music for this upcoming movie, and they have about 34 minutes in the canon at this point. So it would suggest that most of the scores are usually about 2 hours and 15 minutes. So the average Star Wars movie has been about 2 hours, with the most detailed soundtrack actually being Phantom Menace, the deluxe edition. So this should be kind of, this will be a little bit longer. So,
well, there's a lot of cleanup that JJ has to do over Rian Johnson's.
Right, exactly. His brother had said, but I can tell you that every theme that you heard is going to be compiled into this last effort. From Leia's theme, Yoda's, Phantom, Darth, it's all going to be in there. And in his usual style, he'll actually be hiding some of it. So you're going to have to go back and listen, for them. So it'll be interesting. So it sounds like, J.J. Abrams and John Williams are going to actually give a great send-off, hopefully, and Star Wars Rise of the Skywalker will be December 20th, so not that much longer.
I can't help but think, given the last couple of weeks of entertainment news and the number of lawsuits that people have been getting hit with for reusing someone else's work.
So is John Williams going to sue himself?
Is Disney going to, sue
that's funny.
John
Never
Williams for using
that.
His, like that's a lawsuit just waiting to happen there.
That's right? Funny. That is funny.
It goes back to Creedence suing John Fogerty for copying himself.
Himself, yeah.
So, okay. It's going to be awesome. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
I think it's, and now you're even more, school starting back up. Ooh, that means we're getting closer.
And that's the thing. It's like I didn't have a problem with the music in Last Jedi. I had a problem with the directing and the story and how much Rian Johnson screwed everything up in Last Jedi. So
right.
So the music's going to be great. I have no doubt. This little bit of information is helpful, but JJ really needs to pull this franchise out of the trash right now.
I think he knows he has to, because if he doesn't, then everybody's going to be he's dead to us.
End the Skywalker saga on a high note, and then let Rian Johnson bastardize it from there. It's not my Star Wars anymore after that.
Right.
And Rian Johnson can do whatever the hell he wants with it from there.
One last cute little Star Wars story.
And another Star Wars story, yeah.
See, look at that. It's like a Star Wars podcast without it being one.
We'll have to work on that. So what do we got
into now? Star Wars. As it gets closer, there we go.
Insights into Star Wars. There we go.
So Mattel has a new Star Wars Barbie, and they are exquisite. So if you want to bring them up, So when you think Star Wars Barbie as a concept, you probably think, oh, we're just going to put, Barbie in cosplay and, call it a day, which they've done before because there has been the Princess Leia.
Let me just chime in real quick. The R2 dress. not liking it at all.
Yeah, that one is a little weird. So Mattel and Lucasfilms announced a new collaboration series that will see three new Star Wars-themed Barbie dolls hit the store shelves later this year. And this same collaboration recently did a Ziggy Stardust Barbie, a 13th Doctor Barbie, and even Dana Scully Barbie from X-Men. Not X-Men, X-Files. So the dolls are, you know, from what you can see, they're not just a Barbie in, you know, a cosplay outfit. It's a very exquisite outfit. It's a very detailed outfit. If you look at, if you go back to Princess Leia, she actually has, like, her purse has the Rebellion logo on it. And then she still has the buns, but they're like a more classic look about the hair. If you look at the Darth Vader, you know, the breast panel is like her little purse.
Let's call it the chest panel.
Sorry, the chest panel. Whatever. The chest panel, you know, is a little purse, and, you know, it's kind
of... Does it attach to the chest, though? That
I
would be kind
don't
of
know.
Cool.
It the one person in the article said it was very Edna Mole from The Incredibles, you know, look to it. And then the R2-D2 one was a bit more punk, Lady Gaga-ish, I guess. And what's neat is that her purse is C-3PO.
What part of him, though?
Well, I think it's his head, I think, or
so
something.
So she ripped off C-3PO's head, and she keeps her packaging
in
there.
So it was just, you know, if you're into, you know, so it's not just, you know, Barbie in dress-up, it's glamorous, you know, Barbie.
So how much are these supposed to go for at retail?
Well, because these are glamorous Barbies, they are going to be going for $100 a piece.
Of course.
So, yeah, these are the collectible ones, not like, you know, the ones you just kind of...
Well, and I can totally see us, you know, I could see me getting the Darth Vader one for our daughter and it sits on the shelf.
Right. Right. Or sits, you know...
Or it sits in the...
Corner
in the studio.
And nobody...
we don't have enough stuff in here already.
Right. Or you got Darth Vader, you know, maybe Darth needs a girlfriend and she's...
Yeah, we're going to have to dedicate a podcast just to how the studio is set up at some point.
Yeah, and do a little tour.
Like a little special edition.
There you go. Maybe that'll be our special 30th, you know,
anniversary?
Episode. Our 30... God, if we make it 30 years, holy crud. Yeah. So that is it for all of my entertainment and Disney updates.
And oh boy, how entertaining it was. Shall we move on to our insightful picks?
Let's finish off with our insightful picks.
And I turn it over to you, my dear.
So my insightful pick is a new show that actually just aired last Tuesday on the CW from 9 to 10. It is called Mysteries Decoded. And what happens is over the course of the hour, it's kind of done in an investigative documentary style where they delve deep into America's greatest unsolved mysteries, exploring newly discovered evidence and utilizing high-tech tools to reopen these cases.
That sounds dangerously close to a documentary.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So from Area 51 to the Salem witch trials, each investigation is led by Jennifer Marshall, who is an accomplished U.S. Navy veteran turned private investigator, as she mobilizes a team to embark on the quest to bring closure to these long lingering historical puzzles. So this past week's episode was actually Lizzie Borden. And what was interesting about it was this woman, Jennifer Marshall, she's kind of the lead investigator. She's very much a skeptic when it comes to different things. So they had a local medium come in to kind of, you know, help with things and, oh, I feel this, I feel that. And Jennifer's just kind of sitting there like, I don't feel anything, you know? So it was kind of interesting to see that. And then at one point, They went to another location and they had a local group of ghost hunters come in and do part of an investigation with that. So, you know, so it wasn't all like a ghost hunter show and it wasn't all historical stuff. It was like a little bit of everything. And then she actually had like a forensic specialist, you know, come in and they went through the court documents and, you know, and kind of went through all the things and, you know, said how many loopholes there were in different things. And basically at the end of it, they concluded that Lizzie Borden did in fact kill her parents, that
I knew she did it all along.
Like, one of the interesting things was that, like, she, you know, somebody, they had said, you know, like, when the police came, like, she didn't have any blood on her dress, but that she also looked very full, and, like her dress seemed very full, and what the one investigator had found out was that she had multiple dresses made in different sizes, so she wore this thinner dress, that's what she killed her parents in, then put another dress over, so she was wearing the bloody dress with the
police.
So
she had this all planned out that far in advance.
Yeah, and that's what they were saying, is that when you kind of look back and piece things together, she really did have this all planned out, and that there were things that, like, basically the day that her parents were killed was kind of the final day, because she had actually tried killing them a few days before. She had actually tried poisoning them with arsenic and it didn't work, and then she tried doing something else.
So then she figured what, lead poisoning was best with the, you know,
well, because what was supposed to happen was that day they were supposed to go to the bank and she was supposed to be taken off of the will and she wasn't supposed to be getting an inheritance. So when you look back at all of this evidence and you go, okay, so, you know, years later now,
sounds interesting.
So it was, again, it was a totally different take because it wasn't just the investigation part. They had the little bit of the ghost hunter stuff and, you know, different things, you know, involved. So
very cool.
It was one of those things. It definitely kept my attention and, you know, interesting to see their, you know, their other episodes after this one. So
cool.
Mysteries Decoded on the CW.
Very cool pick.
Thank you.
So my pick this week is, shocker, a documentary.
Oh my gosh.
And you know how you can tell it's a documentary? Because it's on the Smithsonian Channel. Which I didn't realize it was on when I told you about it before.
Right, because you told me it was some other channel, and I tried looking it up, and I couldn't find it.
Well, there are so many channels to with documentaries.
That
anymore.
Is true. That
so
is
this
true.
Is Mystic Britain. Over Britain's tens of thousands of years of civilization, its history has played host to a series of strange and mysterious rituals, events, and cultures. British talk show host Clive Anderson and anthropologist Mary Ann Akota travel across the UK to explore the sacred sites and supernatural beliefs of the ancient Britons. By examining their mystic places and practices, they hope to unlock the secrets of their ancestors and better understand the worlds in which they lived. So it's a new series. It's 4 episodes in right now.
Right.
I've only seen one. Right. You saw Witches and Demons?
Witches and Demons. That was the only one that was showing up on demand at the time.
Right. So in Witches and Demons, they go into Black Death rituals to Henry VIII's sorcery ban and James I's witch hunts, which helped to emphasize Good Omens.
Yes.
Because we talked, they explored that in Good Omens, too.
And Doctor Who.
And Doctor Who, yeah. And Doctor Who. And you get to witness medieval Britain's war on evil.
Mm-hmm.
They do the Rollright Witch, where they examine a 6,000-year-old Rollright stones and the legendary tales of witches and fairies and druids. Then this week's was Hadrian's Mystic Wall. How the battle between the druid-led Brits and the superstitious Romans led to the building of the massive mystical wall. And the first one in the series was The Revenants. Enter the abandoned village of Warham Percy, home to the mysterious pit of human bones. And what's neat is there's science behind it.
Mm-hmm.
They go to these places. You see what these places look like. You,
right.
you almost feel like you get to touch these pieces mm-hmm. of history.
Right.
But it's not all stuffy science stuff.
Right.
I mean, Clive Anderson, a lot of people may know him from Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Mm-hmm.
In the UK. He's hilarious,
mm-hmm.
you know, and
yeah.
it's the same dry humor that mm-hmm. you're used to. You know, he shows up at the Rollwright Stones, and there's a bunch of people doing a Druid reenactment there, and you could just imagine how his contemporary humor mm-hmm. is you know, experiencing this. He's
right, right.
He's saying and concluding a lot of the same things that I would say myself.
Right.
Like, really? It's like we're all dressed up for this. Is this really what we're going to do here,
right,
guys?
Right,
you know?
Right.
So there's an element of humor to it.
Mm-hmm.
There's science to it. And there's history to mm-hmm. it.
Yeah, well, like I said, I saw the Witches and Demons one. And the part of it was they had him get dressed in the Black Death
yes.
outfit.
Yes.
And it was kind of interesting because you're looking at it and you're going, oh, my God, that's so weird looking. But it had practicality to it.
Or like, at least they thought it did.
Right. Well, they had the long nose so that, you know.
And they would put the herbs at the tip of it,
you know,
and they thought that would filter any of the
right.
evil
and
spirits.
Right. And, you know,
in.
Obviously the gloves were meant so that, you know. So it and he was saying how ridiculous he looked, you
right.
know, in it and everything, but it had the practicality to it for the time. So it was interesting. So I'm looking forward to seeing the other episodes.
It's a very interesting show in the way that they're kind of like your pick, where they assemble things and present them in a way that you don't normally
mm-hmm.
see them in most
right.
documentaries.
Right, right.
So Mystic Britain is on the Smithsonian Channel. Check your local listings, because when I went to look at the listings, the times were erratic, I'll
mm-hmm.
say.
If you have a DVR, you're probably...
Yes, and they do stream them off the website, too, if
oh,
you
okay.
want to watch them off the website.
Good to know.
So that was my pick of the week. Did we have any afterthoughts?
I don't think we did.
Okay. So then I think we are done for the week.
Mm-hmm.
And we're out of here.
We're out of here.
Thanks a lot.
Have a good week, everyone.
Bye.